Good evening, family. I'm an addict named Walston. Real grateful addict. Tuesday passed, I turned 66 years old. A few days prior to that, a young man was stabbed on the metro station in Deanwood in Washington, D.C. A week prior to that, another young man was shot in his chest at the same metro station. Violence. It's got to stop. We have the ability to do that. Started from the bottom. I can't hear you. I said started at the bottom. I want to thank the South Potomac area for inviting me to participate in this convention. I'm overwhelmed and really grateful. I know it's but for the grace of God that I stand here before you to try to share my humble story of being brought from the bottom. I really didn't have a lot to do with it. It's a part of me still ain't been to the meeting yet. That like thing. And you know what thing is, whatever thing. You know. But I've been here long enough that I like this just a little bit more. So I keep coming. And I'm reaping the benefits of that. Service is a posture of the heart. Oh, that's a mighty, mighty powerful subject. But before I got there, before I understood service, what I understood most was my total self-centeredness. Somewhere I heard over the years, man wrapped in self is a mighty small package. I was so consumed with me, what I felt, what I thought, what I wanted. And if y'all would just cooperate, but y'all didn't cooperate. And so I went on through life having been introduced to some substances early on. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia. No, I was born in Alexandria. I was born in Alexandria, Virginia. But I was raised in Washington, D.C. I now live in Maryland, right? Some people ask me, what area do I represent, right? You know, I played a little football in high school. And I said, well, you know, I always wanted to be all metro, so... Come on, y'all. I'm all metro. My recovery started in Virginia and moved to D.C. and now it's in Maryland. So, I mean, that sounds like all metro to me. One thing about this process here, let me just say this. If I ain't having fun, I hear you, Cliff. Powerful program we're in. Powerful, powerful program. At any rate, I went on through life using these substances, and the substances in the beginning were fun. You know, I mean, it became the panacea. It became the answer to all my insecurities, all my low self-esteem, and I vowed to have it at all costs. And that wasn't hard to do because the dope was $1.50. Yeah, I'm an old dope fiend. I'm a B.C. dope fiend. I'm a B.C. addict that bumped into crack anyway. Yeah, because I like whatever we're working with, you know? I like it liquid. I like it solid. I like it gas. I like it human. You getting all this? Most of all, I like it free. Yeah, I know some people out there just like me. That's the beautiful thing about this program, man. You know, because I always ran from y'all. You know, real insecure. My mother moved from Alexandria to Central Avenue, Washington, D.C., behind the shrimp boat. And I had to go to a junior high school near an infamous housing project called Lincoln Heights. Scared to death. Who ever heard of a dope fiend named Walston? Look, with curly hair. Playing a clarinet in the school marching band. It's my story. It don't change. You know, I know some of my friends have heard it. I want to thank my sponsors for being here. My lovely wife is sitting on stage with me. I want to thank her for just allowing me to participate in her recovery and her life. Yeah, y'all give her a hand. She earned it. She deserves it. But so anyway, I had to go to this junior high school, real insecure, scared little guy. But Thing took care of all of that. Y'all know what I'm talking about when I say Thing, right? Whatever your thing is, that's the thing I'm talking about. It was my thing, but I'm talking about, the substance don't matter, because what I found out was that was just a symptom of much deeper problems. I didn't know that then, because I remember before we moved to D.C., 6 years old, in the house on West Street in Alexandria, it used to be furniture moving downstairs, and there wasn't no furniture movers in the house. Yeah, I'm talking about sirens and mama hollering and daddy cursing and glass breaking and me upstairs, 6 year old, just not understanding. I'm talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, not analyzed, not diagnosed. They talk about we got a disease that defies detection, diagnosis, or treatment. That was me. So substances served their purpose for a long time. And I used them until somewhere in our literature says we crossed the invisible line. Yeah, I mean, I was always told I had a lot of potential. You know, I wasn't feeling that. I didn't feel like I had a lot of potential. As a matter of fact, I didn't like me. There was always a war going on inside. There was a spiritual warfare going on inside. A lot of low self-esteem. But, you know, you can't go on 14th Street talking about I'm feeling a bit inadequate. I'm feeling a little insecure. Yeah, you learn how to mask up real quick if you're going to get on every day. And that became my mission, to get on every day. I didn't know I had an addiction. I didn't know I had a problem. I just thought, who didn't use? And so I went on using substances everything I touched, man, I started to sabotage my life in so many ways. I went on to Spingarn and became a pretty good football player. Didn't graduate. Got into a junior college out in Oregon. And what that told me was that I could do what I wanted to do in life and still be successful. You know, so I took that disease thinking, just disordered thinking. See, by now, the low self-esteem had turned into an inflated sense of self. I'm talking about blowed up. I'm a walking contradiction. Somebody can relate, I'm sure. I'm talking about the spiritual warfare was no longer a war. Because I chose the spirit I was going to follow. Yeah, I made a conscious decision that I had to grit at the world. As a matter of fact, I used to practice in the mirror on Central Avenue, gritting at me. I can't even do that shit no more. You know, I said I wasn't going to curse. And, just let me just say this. When you come from the old joints and the crack houses where I came from, you know, you got to excuse me if I say a motherfucker every now and then or something. I'm just talking about, it wasn't pretty. In the end, it was not pretty. I was going in, you ever went in a crack house or old joint and wanted to come out and couldn't leave? I'm talking about, I was stuck in these spots. I had a stem that was about that big. I don't like crack, but, you know, give me the flip. Had a little band, a little taper in on one end. Because I knew somebody was on their way in there, Janice. They was going to need my stem. I'm talking about in the end, there was no veins. Yeah, I'm trying to get to the part that we need to get to. Because, see, we know all that stuff about you played ball. We know that you went to school. But what we need to know is that the disease progressed. And the progression of disease renders you powerless. But I didn't know that. So give me two and a cane. Yeah, now I can't get this shit in me, but that's a minor problem. Because I remember my second step showed up at J.R.'s Oil Joint on 6th Street. He had just oiled in his groin. He had his pants down around his legs, telling him, life don't get much better than this. And I was looking at him, but I was plucking the needle in my neck, telling him, boy, you need to get you some help. Yeah, Yeah, I'm talking about dog. Was God sent dog here before me because he knew I needed to see somebody that I thought was worse than me. Because see, he had 3 abscesses, I had 2, so I thought he was just a little worse off. But I remember when I showed up some years later, and Doug was up here doing what I'm trying to do now, and I looked, and I was sitting in the back of the room with my 3 teeth at that time. Yeah. I'm talking about, I had 3 teeth in the back, and he was talking about, yeah, and he was talking these spiritual principles, and I got my grill. I was like, that motherfucker talking about me. But he was telling this story. So let me just say this. If you're sitting here and you ain't got your grill together, I'm telling my story. Because you can get your grill right in here too. You just got to keep coming back. I moved to 2 kind of quick. And I skimmed over 1, but you need to know that I didn't come out of 1 that easy. See, I understand today that the grace of God is what got me here. I didn't get me here. I didn't choose this. I wanted to stop at the end, but I couldn't stop. I just told you, I couldn't get off the crack house. I couldn't get off the oil joint. As a matter of fact, everything I touched, I sabotaged. But in the end, I was selling jewelry that I would convince you was much like what I'm wearing today, which is legitimate. That was my job. I did that for 3 years. I walked the streets of Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, and I sold people stuff that wasn't real. One sister in here right now, I sold some earrings to. She walked up to me at my new job that I've been on there 7 years, and she said, I know you. I said, oh, yeah, where you know me from? And she thought about it, and she came back like, you sold me those earrings. Where my $50? I said, Sylvia, you were not on my 8-step list, baby. But I'm just talking about, when I'm caught up in the disease of addiction, I don't have healthy relationships. I didn't know that was my problem. I really thought that I had a narcotics problem. Oh yeah, I did. But it was much deeper than that. I don't have healthy relationships with folks. I mean, if I'm not all right with me, what you think you got coming? And I wasn't all right with me. So I went out there for 3 years and I walked the streets of Washington, D.C., selling slum to people, beating people, taking from people, manipulating people, lying to people. I became very good at being dishonest. That's probably the most honest thing I can say about me. But I'm getting better. And often it amazes me how people see things in me that I still struggle with seeing. It's a part of me that thinks I'm supposed to be the speaker. But it's another part of me, when I'm chosen, that question, why me? I didn't send for them. They sent for me. And I know that's why I was saved, by the grace. There's some people in here right now struggling. It's no coincidence that you're here. You hang with us, man. I guarantee you, this shit gonna be all right. This program is powerful. You know, I started selling that slum so often, man, I wonder why didn't nobody kill me. Every day, that was my job. My second wife used to drop me off downtown Washington, D.C. At a slum shop called El Ruse. And I didn't have to have no money because the man knew I was going to be in and out of there all day getting the slum. And he would give me a piece to start me off. And I'd walk the streets of Washington, D.C. and make money and hurry uptown, get me a shot of dope before my bowels broke. And then on my way back downtown, I'd have to stop because I don't like crack, but give me a $10 bag of that shake. It just looked like it got more in it. And I'm going to smoke that. in a house that's got defecation in the corner, and you know, people laying around, and then I'm gonna get me a half pint of Velikov, cold, and I'm gonna drink that straight down. See, so if what you see up here don't look like what that just described, that's because I got my NA grill now, and I got an NA glow because I've been hanging with y'all. But God saw fit to pull me out of that, because I remember one day in Alexandria, I was walking around trying to help somebody else. I've always tried to help people. I remember doing a fourth step, and I was, and the sponsor said, "You got to write something good about yourself." And I couldn't think of nothing good to say. And he told me to reflect on that. You got to find something good to say about yourself. And it dawned on me that at least I would share my dope with you every now and then. Yeah, I'm not as bad as I thought I was, but I'm not as good as I thought I was. The steps helped me get right-sized in this process. You know, so, you know, he pulled me. God saw me moving along, and I think I was just right for NA. I had been introduced to y'all about 8 years prior to this pending arrest. You know, so the seed had been planted, but I wasn't ready. So somebody hollered at me, "Slim, what you working with?" And I, you know, I never go anywhere without my wares, and I had my wares. And so I showed the man what I had, and I made a hot $8 or something. And, you know, $8 wasn't enough to get a bag of dope, but all money is what? Yeah, thank you. I knew I was in the right place. So I went and got a bag of that, I mean, a rock of that stuff I don't like, but, you know, and I was walking up the street to try to find somewhere to smoke it, and somebody hollered the jump out was coming. And so I figured I could crush it in my fingers and be all right, right? And just keep, you know how we act like we ain't did nothing. Just move along casually, you know. And the police jumped out the cruiser and twisted my arm behind my back. And he took his knife out and scraped some crumbs on the hood of the cruiser, right? I said, "What you gonna do with that?" "Lock your monkey ass up." Yeah, I just told y'all I was 66 Tuesday. I was 41 when that arrest happened. You know, and I had been I had been incarcerated in Atlanta, Georgia, Washington, D.C., Portland, Oregon, Washington, D.C. a number of times, Old Alexandria Detox, New Alexandria Detox, D.C. General Detox. Been shot very near Snubby. If you don't know Snubby, see me after the meeting, I'll tell you. Been shot on Southern Avenue. Endocarditis around my heart, from the cut. What I'm trying to describe is powerlessness. My inability to stop despite a funeral was going to happen. And I was going to be the star attraction. But God saw fit to cancel that. And I'm so grateful. I'm so forever grateful. So anyway, you know, I got probation out of that charge, and I wound up, I couldn't stop using. I still couldn't stop. I was trying, but I couldn't stop using. And finally, I had to go to the judge and show cause. You know what show cause mean, right? Of course, after about 18 dirty urines, the judge said, And I was incarcerated for about 4 months in the Alexandria Detention Center for what I hope was the last time I will ever be incarcerated. And I remember being up on the third floor and the young boys beating on the table and shook them up. "Slim, don't fuck with that TV." I said, "Damn, who are you talking to?" "We're talking to your ass." I said, "Man. Time me to do something about my life." I'm 41, man. I think I'm going to go downstairs to that treatment program they got down there. I never do anything just because it's the right thing to do. I do it. I always got to have an ulterior motive. So I went down to that treatment program. You could come out of the cells. They didn't lock. When you locked down, you could come out into the open pop area. That sounded like a good reason to go. Plus, them youngins wasn't talking to me real nice, so... Yeah, but anyway, I stayed in there for 4 months, and I started practicing on taking the mask off, because I was tired, y'all. I was tired. My hands were swollen up like boxing gloves. I had three teeth. I was about three shades darker. I weighed 206 now. I probably weighed about 158 on a good day. Yeah, man, I got pictures of myself back then, man. They scared me. Yeah. Shallow of a man. Not only did I look physically bad, but I was emotionally a cripple. I was a baby. And I remember sitting in that jail in the treatment group session one day, and I was reading my autobiography. Now I know my first attempt at a fourth step. And I got to this part in the story where I talked about my father's death. He was an alcoholic, and I know that today. I knew then that he had been murdered. Fairfax County ruled it a suicide. And I started reading about his death. I had to make the decision to pull the plug because they said he was going to be a vegetable. And I did that, but I had never grieved his death because I kept using. And but now I'm in the jail reading this, and all of a sudden these feelings rush me. And you know where I come from, like I said, I mask up all the time. I don't show no emotions, but I ain't got nothing in me right now. I'm in this jail, and I'm trying to get better. And the tears started to flow. You know, we all got on the same designer jumpsuits. But the tears started to flow. Somebody said, Slim, it's all right, man. Free yourself. That was my first understanding of the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, being without parallel. I left that jail after 4 months of practicing, taking off the mask, and I vowed that I would continue to go to meetings, and I've done that. I've been to every convention down here, starting with sharing from the heart. Other than one, I missed one. I never imagined in my wildest imagination that I would ever have the opportunity to stand up before my peers and tell my humble story. I'm really grateful. So, I have gone to meetings. I got a sponsor. I pray. I meditate. I help people. I got some people that kind of like depend on me in one way or another. And I want to make it very clear that all these people that God has sent into my life, I know He sent into my life because He know I need a lot of help. Yeah, that's the paradox of this whole process I'm in. That because I've been so near death, I so appreciate life. You know, I didn't know how simple and important breathing was until it became an issue. You know, and so paradoxically, anyone could be standing up here telling their story right now, but it just happens to be my turn. So, I remember getting to the fourth step, and my sponsor said, talk to me every now and then as you're going through that process. And I was telling him about having had these homosexual liaisons. I like saying it like that. Just sounds a little. So he said, well, why you do that? I said, because I needed the money. He said, no, but I mean, but why? I said, man, why you keep asking me why? He said, because it don't make no difference whether you was pitching or catching. You were still in the game. I say, sponsor, what you trying to call me? He said, I'm not trying to call you anything. I just want you to get all right with whoever you are. That was so important because, like I just told you, I used half my life. I was 41 when the grace intervened. So I really didn't know who I was. I don't know who I am unless I'm on thing. And who I am when I'm on thing is a 6'2 man that turns into a 5'6 midget. I didn't know that until I did my fifth step, messed around and stood up. I started to look the world in the eye again. Yeah, I didn't know that I was 6'2". I was walking around in 1992 with 1986 on my back. Yeah, I'm talking about having baggage, man, and don't even know you got baggage. I'm gritting at people, can't speak to people, can't open the door for nobody. Ain't no excuse me's in my vocabulary, thank yous, or none of that. I mean, if you got $20 or something, you might get a please. Yeah, I know I'm not in here by myself. I'm talking about living on animalistic instincts. That's what I have been reduced to. And now I'm trying to re-enter society, but I don't know how to live in society. You know, I mean, I got some education, but, you know, I know how much water to put on the dope. And y'all told me this ain't an intellectual exercise. You can't make intellectual sense out of spiritual matters. And I started to realize that my finite mind could never understand God and His infinite wisdom. It's really about me starting to build this relationship with the power that got me here. That means I got to move the self-centered things out of the way that blocked me from this grace. And they keep cropping up though, y'all. They don't go nowhere. Yeah, I'm talking about, man, really starting to understand that it's a spiritual solution to the human condition. You can't put a humble man in his place. Somebody missed that one. I'm talking about anything to bring me to my knees is good. And I was brought to my knees because I did it to me. Didn't nobody, if you did to me what I did to me, I'd try to kill you. But I did it to me. The night I rode up on Southern Avenue and you ever went into a spot and it seemed like something wasn't quite right? Now, I didn't know it was my spirit speaking to me because it had too much dope on top of it, defects of character on top of it. But I said, I just played past that and went and parked my car, came back down on Southern Avenue, stood beside. I saw Bam Earl. Bam Earl always got a caper. We're going to get us some money, figure out what to do. And a shot rang out in Bell's Liquor Store lot. Before I could even shape my mouth to laugh, another shot rang out, and I grabbed myself. I told y'all I hit my snubby, right? That 32 is still in there, right? And I started running. And they said, "Get down, fool, they're shooting." I sat down on the curb, and all the guys started coming up around me, telling me, "What'd you do?" And I started to reflect on my day. I mean, I don't play fair. I couldn't figure it out. And I remember the ambulance driver came up and he pulled out his scissors. I had on brand new jeans, y'all. And he pulled out his scissors and said, "What you going to do with them?" He said, "I'm going to cut your jeans." I said, "These new jeans." "Fool, you got a bullet hole in the jeans." Man, my mind was so distorted, so out of touch with reality. Sponsor helped me see that humility is a sense of reality. Yeah, I never saw life realistically. I see life through distorted lenses. Yeah, man, I mean, I'm talking about I got to keep allowing people to help me. I never asked for no help. The only help I need is, can you hit me for no money? Yeah, I always got short money. The man said, "A dope, $40. I peeled two. I got 40, but I peeled two. I'll put it over here. And one put it over here, and I hand him $37. He said, "Sam, didn't I tell you the dope was $40? "Yeah, man, but that's all I got." Well, see, the difference about that and this is you can't come short in here. If you want what we got, you got to come with all the money. Nothing short of continuous action will bring about the much desired result. It's an action program. We learn how to talk in here. We learn how to describe our feelings and all of that good stuff. But if you ain't making your feet match what your mouth doing, Walston, you missing the program. Program. A plan of action. 12 steps, 12 traditions, and concepts to match. I got to learn how to live these things in my life. So after I told on myself, and I figured out I wasn't homosexual for real. I mean, it's all right if that's what you want to do, but, you know, I do some other things. Yeah, I mean, because what I'm trying to get to is, I had to learn how to love me. And once I started learning how to love me, I was better able at having healthy relationships. And even with that said, I've been married 4 times. Yeah, but you know what? The last one is sitting right here. I walked around in this convention a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, with a trophy on my arm that turned around into a nightmare. And I was working with the only poison that can eat through its own container. It's called resentment. I wanted a lamppost to fall on her or something. But see, what I had to understand was she did what she do. You got to get in position to get, whatchamacallit? I'm doing better, y'all. Yeah, I'm talking about, man, the sister did what she do. I did what I did, and I was wrong. I got to understand what part I play in the situation around here. You know, I'm always pointing the finger, forgetting that it's 3 of them pointing back at me. No, I understand today that it starts with me and it ends with me. So I started making some decisions that I wanted to change. I wanted to be a man, upstanding man. I wanted my children back in my life. You know, because I abandon children. I make babies. The man in treatment told me that I was a donor. Crush me. I jumped up out the seat. My 3 teeth. He said, sit down. You was a donor. He was right. I make babies. I don't take care of babies. I don't buy soap. I don't buy toilet paper. Who buy that shit? Toothpaste. Who buy that? For what? I thought they'd get that shit out. Like the cheese and the pile of milk and shit. Hey, look. What I'm trying to talk about, I'm talking about an addict that was messed up. That's getting better. An addict that some people see some things in that ask me to participate in their life. That's because I try to learn how to recognize that these defects of character, they're all fear-based. They're all fear-based. It was always like, fuck everything and run, or fuck everything and relapse. But y'all taught me how to face everything and recover. You know? It's like at the root of every defect of character is fear. Fear that I'm going to lose something that I think I got, or fear that I'm not going to get something that I think I got. Or I'm going to lose something that I think I got. You know, I need to get that stuff back in balance. And guess what? Those defects become assets. Back in balance. And then when they crop back up, because they're going to crop back up. Yeah, then I recognize that I got to go to the one that brought me here. See, because you got a relationship now, Walston. But I remember I had that, you know that cable you get without the bill? Yeah, I had that. I had that one time. I'm talking about early in recovery, though, y'all. Long time ago. My wife called me. She said, honey, the cable is off. I said, oh, shoot, that ain't a problem. All I got to do is call. But see, I'm working on myself, girl. I'm working on myself now. And I'm thinking that, you know, you can't keep doing the same thing, man. That's unlawful. Because I'm a creature of comfort. And I have to learn how to deny myself. Self-renunciation. If you want to grow spiritually, Walston, then you need to become disciplined. The only disciplined thing about me was I was going to shoot some dope every day. No, you got to get disciplined in this process at practicing these spiritual principles. So I needed to invite God in to help me with my decision-making, because when I'm confronted with the Gators or the Pepco bill, boy, why does the struggle get so hard? When she walk in the room and she looking like she looking, and my eyes start to wandering, why can't I avert the eye? Yeah, I'm talking about growing along spiritual lines, because you want to get better, and the way you get better is by building this relationship with the one that's got all power. Because he really got something for me to do. That's why he saved me. He ain't saved me for me. So I made this little list. And, you know, being the intellectual idiot that I was, I questioned that. But I understand about these steps. These steps are a setup. Yeah, they're set up, man. I didn't know that they got principles embodied in each and every one of them, that if practice, if you learn how to live, you start to gain some freedom. The seven steps showed me that. How free do you really want to be? How free do you really want to be? If I want to really be free, then I need to get right-sized. Because I already told you I was out of balance. I'm a walking contradiction. Now I'm trying to learn how to understand my limitations and my strengths. You know, I don't need to talk all the time. I don't need to laugh at the jokes that ain't funny. You know, I can be right and be quiet. I'm talking about the peace. I'm talking about being humble on a deeper level. Where you don't have to talk about being humble. It's a suit that you wear. Be a prayer. Don't always have to say a prayer. So I made the list, and I remember getting to this place on the list where I didn't have the child's name because I abandoned her at birth in Oregon. Her mother was Mexican, and I fathered this little girl. I saw her one time in the hospital, and I rolled out. And I came back to the East Coast after getting out of a legal situation there. Never saw her. And I remember putting on the list, baby, put up for adoption. And I said, I'm never going to get to do anything in this area. But the literature say, do the eighth step like there's no. See, that motherfucking emotion just came, y'all. Because the daughter found her father. I was on the phone one day with my grand sponsor, talking about these feelings of inadequacy about not being able to buy Christmas gifts for my four children that lived in the area. And the little beep come that says you got a call on the other line. And just show you how quick I can become self-centered again, I said I'm not going to click over because I'm getting this help. And I kept talking to Tom. And then it just dawned on me that I might want to check and see if it's my wife or if it's a sponsee or somebody that might need me. And so I clicked over, and the person said, is this Walton Barburn? I was like, who? Ralston? I said, you want Ralston Barber? She said, yeah. I said, you got him. She said, I'm a private investigator. I was like, oh, no. You got the wrong name. No, you fucked up. This ain't. No. No, that ain't me. She said, no, hold on. I just want to tell you something. You got a daughter that wants to meet you. And I dropped the phone. I had about $56,000 in child support arrears at this time. But see, I was at a fixed address, y'all. I was 8 years clean. I said I was at a fixed address. I said, of course I'll talk to her. And the next Christmas, my daughter, I'm going to say that, she flew into BWI, and when she came down that gangplank, I remember seeing her come, and I saw her nose. First. But she's a pretty girl, pretty lady. And we were able to develop a relationship. And then she flew to Atlanta and met my oldest son, who I abandoned at a year and a half old. And let me just say this. Saying those words don't come easy, but it's some freedom. Because I made a mistake. I'm not a mistake. That's who I used to be. That's not who I am. So if you're in here struggling with these kind of issues, you can get better. So she went to Atlanta and met my son. And then she turned around and got engaged to a guy of Haitian descent. And then invited me to be a participant in her wedding. And we went to Atlanta and practiced at a Southern Baptist church. I was able to make amends to her mother of Mexican descent. Hadn't seen in 30 years. Meet her Haitian in-laws, her white adoptive parents, and she let my black ass be in the wedding. I'm talking about being woven back into the fabric of society. Now, I said I had problems with relationships, but look at that. Yeah, I'm talking about Narcotics Anonymous is strong. But see, you can't be on the fringe talking about what they ain't doing. You got to get in the middle and help somebody. And in the beginning, you got to help. Yeah, I know. I ain't got to say everything. It ain't hard to figure out. You know, so, you know, me and her developed a relationship. And Ninth Step stuff, man, I just told you. You know, I could never make that right. But today I try to be the best parent, best grandparent I can be. You know what I mean? Do something for people and don't tell nobody. See, you know, working with people, you come to understand that. See, I have to part with money sometimes. Don't nobody ask me for no money after this. I said I'm growing along spiritual lines. I ain't arrived yet. But I'm talking about learning how to give everything and expect nothing. So what we're talking about is service being a posture of the heart. You know, I practice prayer. I practice meditation. I'm learning how to sit still and breathe. Learn how to quiet the boombox in my head. Because the chatter gonna always go on. But I can't allow that to stop me from the practice. Because I need shelter from the storm. I need to find it. And the peace is within. I got everything I need within. But I don't tap into the resource. So I got to practice. I got to keep practicing. I got to make sure I'm eating right, working out right. I had Hep C. They messed around and came out with some new dope. Tried to tell me I wasn't going to get it because it was a $1,000 appeal. I said, appeal it. I got insurance. They denied it a second time. I said, appeal it. They gave me that dope. I've been undetectable from Hep C over a year. Yeah, I'm talking about getting some hope up in here. I went back to school, y'all. I didn't graduate from high school. I hung in Rip's pool room. I just told y'all, and still got in school out there in Oregon. I messed around, went back to school, got a master's degree. Then messed around, let a brother take a test. They now licensed me to be a professional therapist. Come on, a dope fiend. Yeah, so I'm having good relationships. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm getting old, y'all. I said 66. My back be bothering me. Yeah. You got to be careful about that bag and that Cialis stuff, y'all. But look, check this out. Even more importantly, my body don't know the difference between illegal or legal drugs. All it knows is, where you been? So I got to monitor, man. I got to tell on myself. I don't come to the podium trying to sound profound. I come to the podium because we help each other in this process. We need to be mindful of what we're doing in our recovery. This 2016. We still in a drug culture. They got some stuff out there now called a bizarro. They got K1s and K2s and Scooby-Doo. Oh, somebody in here fucked up on it right now. But you know what? They're right where they're supposed to be. Just keep coming back. Just come back without the bizarro next time. Leave that Scooby alone, man. I'm trying to describe a message that any addict can stop using, lose the desire. Somebody help me. Oh, thank you very much. So my relationships are better, man. I was in Belize a few years ago, and my best friend passed, and I had to return. My mother died while I was in Belize, and I was on a boat. I've been on boats many times, and I was on this boat, and I got seasick. And got so seasick I had to defecate, and the bathroom on this boat was broken. So the natives told me, hang your ass off the boat. I like doing stuff like that. I hung my ass off the boat. Yeah. Let me tell you something. If you ain't laughing in here, it's like sex. You ain't doing it right.
You gotta loosen up in this process. It ain't that serious. You got here, you all right. You stay with the herd. So, the boat docked. And I got back to my cabin, got a call from my daughter and told me that my mother had just passed. I know, in retrospect, that that was my mother touching me from one continent to another. That's how close we were. That's what I'm talking about, spirituality. When you know that you haven't talked to somebody in so long and the phone ring and it's them. You know when you're headed to the meeting that they're going to ask you to lead the meeting. And you walk in the meeting and they say, damn, man, I'm glad you're here. Can you lead the meeting? I'm talking about the sixth sense that we develop in here. Where service becomes a way of life. Well, opening the door for somebody or saying thank you and excuse me ain't a hardship. It's a given. These people work real hard on this committee. They need an applause. How am I doing for time? So, the book, The Journey Continues, says, the basic text tells us that love is the flow of life energy from one person to another. I thought it was the flow of sperm from one person to another. Sort through the confusion and contradictions in our lives. I'm telling you, I was messed up. I didn't know love was about trying to help and give and share and all that good stuff. But that, it says it right here. This is essential to what we do. We connect with others and through them to a power greater than ourselves. Opening up to the world around us is a spiritual awakening. That's what the literature say. The desire to serve is a manifestation of freedom from self. Anonymity is a key principle in selfless service. When I showed up, I was real selfish about my recovery and helped me get to a place of being able to selflessly try to give it back. When we learn to give selflessly in service to those who suffer and to a power greater than ourselves, we find happiness, purpose, and dignity. Practicing and teaching principle-based service is both a way we carry the message and a way we receive the gifts that recovery has to offer us. It doesn't matter who is doing the giving or the taking. We are all equally entitled to ask and to provide wherever we are. In exchange, we benefit. So in other words, if you deny me my opportunity to serve you, you deny me my opportunity to get better. That sounds like an oxymoron or some shit. Or a paradox. And conversely so, if I want to do something to hurt you, I got to hurt me first. I mean, I got to do something to my spirit in order to pull the cape off. I hope y'all working with me in here. I'm talking about, I ain't trying to preach, but I'm talking about the 12-step process that we are part of. And I'm not talking about the fellowship. I'm talking about the program that will free you in a way that you never imagined. I mean, I don't like crack. I was buying that shit in D.C., smoking it in Maryland, and looking for it on my mother's floor in Virginia. I don't ever want to go back to digging around in the corners of my pockets because I know I got a crumb or some shit. I want freedom. And you get freedom through service. You got to serve, Walston. You got to serve when you don't want to serve. You got to take the collect call from the penitentiary. You got to take them home from the meeting, and it's out of your way. I'm grateful. I think I feel a lot of movement back here, so it must be time for me to clean the works. They ain't want to mess with me. You understand me? But again, the message is that any addict can stop using, lose the desire, and find a new way to live. That's my story. I'm sticking with it. Thank y'all.